Today I have the privilege and the pleasure of introducing my and your boss. I'm here on an extraordinary freedom. I've already made my last lecture. And in addition, this is the last meeting of the year. And before President McPhee gets through, I'll be down and have my paycheck. So I'm extraordinarily free. It's an unusual and de novo situation for me. This man needs no introduction, as you well know. The facilities that you enjoy have come as a result of many, many years of effort on his part. I think it would be presumptuous on my part to say any more other than to introduce President Julian A. McPhee.
Thank you, Phil, and Kalu, members of the staff. I feel honored you have the attendance you say you have, although I wouldn't expect it altogether. I don't want to call this a traditional meeting. I wouldn't like to have it be that formal. However, I want to tell you why I enjoy meeting with you each year and have enjoyed them for the last several years at your last meeting of the Staff Luncheon Club. As we get larger and larger, occasions like this become more infrequent when I get an opportunity to talk to the cross-section of our entire staff. I do prefer an informal opportunity to talk to you rather than to make it more formal when we have a special meeting for some special project or some special problem. It's always difficult to decide on the subject or the items to discuss, and of course your program chairman never gives me any help in that regard. And however, I thought today that first of all, I get the idea I might talk on something that had no bearing on you or on me or about Cal Poly. And on second thought, I thought it was important to bring before you some of the problems and some of the ideas and some of the things that are confronting us in the near future and the long-time future. However, I want to say that in general, Cal Poly's making a lot of progress. It's going ahead very rapidly. Enrollment, we've been very fortunate in our building program. We've been very fortunate in keeping our prow or the ship of state or a ship of Cal Poly going ahead in the right direction. Although we have problems, and as we get larger, we're going to have more and more problems. So today, I want to talk briefly on several items. Among these items will be the relationships with the chancellor and how they will affect Cal Poly. And in those problems, I want to tell you about some of the problems facing the new Chancellor Dumke. Some of the studies that are to be conducted by the Chancellor's office is going to affect us. Some of the budget problems in 1963 and 64 and the subsequent years. Something about the new the Council of State College Presidents. And then something about Cal Poly's long-range planning, the Interim Staff Council, and then a planned program of emphasis for improving instruction. Now that's a mouthful. I don't know if I have to, I hope to get over most of it, but I'll be more brief in some of the items if our time runs short. You've already read in the paper about the difficulty the trustees had in appointing a replacement for Chancellor Gallagher. You know that there, when his name was come up, there were a lot of rocks thrown about him being nominated as chancellor. Some of them came from state college faculties and some from legislators, and even some of the trustees were not ready to appoint him. The governor asked the trustees to take more time. And finally, after a consultation with presidents and some faculty groups of the state, he was finally appointed chancellor. When he was appointed, he inherited a whole house full of problems, or I might say a whole state senate full of problems. And you recall that the senate did not want the chancellor's office to move to Los Angeles. In fact, they had passed a resolution unanimously asking them to stay in Sacramento. Also, they asked the trustees not to pay any salaries higher than $25,000 to any chancellor. They also stated that they didn't want the instructors and the colleges to do research, but they wanted to confine their work to instruction. And those are some of the things, and after quite a bit of discussion and try to pressure, the legislature still felt that same way. So the feelings today against the trustees and the chancellor by many senators are not good. And at the next and between now and the next legislative session, there has to be some fence mending for us. And of course, I mention these because I don't know how it's going to affect Cal Poly. And this is one of the major problems which the Chancellor Dumke and the trustees will have to solve for the state colleges. I had the chancellor on my office, on my campus at Kellogg's here about 2 weeks ago, and I whispered in his ear, I said, Glenn, you got all your problems all solved? He said, yeah, I got some of them solved. I have a whole new bunch of them cropping up. And I said, what's the latest now? He says, communists on the campuses. And there's two campuses where they've had communists, and of course you know what happens when the American Legion and some of the other groups that are very vigorous these days take up the cudgel on such activities, and then you have certain groups among faculties in some of the state colleges who want communists to come on the campuses and talk. And this will probably be a problem before a lot of people, a lot of colleges in the future, and it's going to be a problem that's going to be before the chancellor and the trustees for some time to come. Another problem that he has to do with the lot of groups within the state college system are not working in harmony with one another. Some are on the very liberal side, and some of them are on the very conservative side. At least two state college groups, faculty groups, want to bypass presidents and the chancellor and work directly with the trustees. And that's a problem that the chancellor has to be confronted with. And he has to be responsible, and so do the presidents have to be responsible, and yet with this kind of pressure, it is not too easy. I won't emphasize the problems of the chancellor in relation to the total picture. I said earlier he inherited these problems, and he's well aware of them, and he's not standing still on them. However, the success or failure he has in solving them will affect all the state colleges and will also affect Cal Poly, one way or the other. Whether he solves them, it'll be fine. If he doesn't solve them, it might hurt us. Then there are problems on the day-to-day operations. The trustees are being constantly pressured by various groups. And of course, under the Donahue Act, you know that they set up a coordinating council of representatives from the university, the junior colleges, the state colleges, the governor, the private colleges, and the governor appointed some at large. And their function is to be inspecting all the time all facets of higher education and to see that there's no duplication, to see that one group gets no more than another group, and that they keep everything on an even keel. Then you have legislative committees that work all the time, both from the Assembly and from the Senate. And then you have your legislative analyst who writes big, thick books like this and tells all what's wrong with the faculties and the expenses in the libraries and a lot of other things and tells them to be investigated. Then you have the Auditor General who comes around to all the state colleges and investigates. And he might say in one of the investigations he made and made quite an issue of was our parking fee on this campus. And you know the results of that. So with the trustees pressing the chancellor and his staff, and the staff and his staff have been asked to ask many questions. And they, in turn, are coming to our campuses, and they're going to ask us a lot of questions. And there are analyses that have been made about costs for the legislature this last year, and there will be more to be made, and their requests for further studies. Now, the big reason for this is very obvious. With the predictions for the long-time enrollments in the future for the state colleges and the universities and the junior colleges for that matter, they're going to boom and blossom out into hundreds of thousands. They've already got 17 state college presidents. Two more have been appointed and there'll probably be some more. They've got some more campuses at the University of California. So people, the governor and the legislature are trying to do what they can to prevent or to avoid adding more taxes onto the people of the state. because of political reasons and for other reasons, at the same time these costs are going to continue to mount. So you can see the reason why they're concerned about the costs, and they're going to go give a good deal of scrutiny to them. So they've asked the legislature and the legislative analysts and the various committees of the legislature and the Department of Finance and the legislature itself have asked the trustees to make certain studies. And I'm going to list a few studies that they've asked to be made. You read the news release here about 2 weeks ago after the trustees met up at Chico about the studies that are to be undertaken. It said in effect that Chancellor Glenn Dumke was instructed by the trustees to undertake studies requested by the Senate and Assembly Committee on Admissions, Faculty Staffing, Productivity, Library Book Acquisitions and Staff, and Student Health Centers. Now we've met with the Chancellor, and he has sent out lots of information, and we've talked to his staff, and we know that underway there will be soon definite studies in these areas. For example, on admissions policies, the questions are going to be asked: how many students can the state afford to educate in higher education, and at what costs? And this means that there's going to be a trend in the state colleges and in the universities for higher and higher entrance requirements, so that the state will not have to pay the high costs that will come about by these very highly increased enrollments. And then the question we have to ask ourselves: how are these higher entrance requirements going to affect our Cal Poly occupationally centered program? Faculty staffing is another one they've been asked to study. With higher costs, the state will want to put the ratio, which is about one teacher to 16 students at the present time. They want to increase that, I'm sure, to around 1 to 21. This can adversely affect our occupational training program. And they've already started on these high-costing programs. And they've made these studies. And the first one right here is agriculture. And they have here what each state college has on a student-teacher ratio for agriculture and its comparison to the rest of the program. It has engineering. It has education. It has all programs. It has business education. It has all of them. The idea being that they're going to find out what the staffing formulas are, and those programs that cost too much, they're going to be under scrutiny. They're going to have to justify themselves. And that's the purpose that they're asking for these studies. Now, productivity is another one that the legislative analyst wrote. It's on page 226 of this book. And it says that in that statement that they want to know whether the faculties and the staffs and the various colleges are producing at the highest excellence. And some of the things these studies will want to bring out, and they're suggested in here already, about they're suggesting increased class size by expanding enrollments per class, increased faculty load in terms of the number of courses or course units to be taught, the use of television and other equipment to increase productivity. Now, these are the studies that have been requested by the legislature of the trustees, and the chancellor's office is now getting ready to make them. There's another one coming up on library book acquisitions and staffing. I don't know what the detail is there, but they've been feeling that the cost per book to be processed through the library is too high, and they're asking for too many people for the staff, and they're asking for too much in the way of certain kinds of books. So there's a study to be made and be reported to the legislature in 1963. Another one will be the student health centers. The state wants to know how far it is obligated to go in providing health services for students and who's going to pay for it. And since we have the largest health center program, we're going to be vulnerable in that study. And we're trying to watch that very closely on this campus as to who should pay for what. Who will the state pay for it? Will the student pay for it? Will all the students pay for others who are hypochondriacs, or how it's going to be taken care of? A study is to be made on that. So the big question is, how will these studies affect Cal Poly, and what can we do to affect our program in such a way that we won't come out unscathed? Now, the budget situation is different than it ever was. We were almost independent, as you probably know, over the years. We started with horse race money when we had no budget. We just took the money out of a pot and spent it. And we were very careful, and they watched us carefully, but we that we got a good reputation by being conservative. And then finally we had to get under the general fund and get our money in competition with other colleges. Then it was on the basis of need. We would go and request the amount of money we needed for a certain course or program or project or whatever else we had, and we usually got it. Sometimes we even gave the state back some money and then got asked more money back in return. But they don't do that anymore under the new setup. Starting in 1961-62 budget, the legislature, the governor said, all they're going to give to all the state colleges, including all the costs for the trustees and all, was $75 million. Now you go on to divide it up among yourselves. Now that's not what they really did. They tell you that if you spent the wrong amount or put so much for too much travel or too many clerical positions or anything like that, then they take them away from you. Then they told you on top of that that you had to make 4.5% salary savings. They gave you the money on the budget, it's in the budget, then you're supposed to give back 4.5% of it by not filling positions. And we're in that spot right this minute. It's usually 2%, but it's up to 4.5%. And that's the policy, whether they're going to continue that policy or not. But it means they're squeezing the colleges and putting them in competition with one another. They gave us this current year, this coming year, 1962-63, a total of $87 million with all the increased number of new colleges at Sonoma and down to San Bernardino and the brand new colleges at Alameda and those others are expanding very rapidly. And now they're telling us in preparation for the next budget that they're going to give us $97 million for the 63-64 program. Now I say that because it does affect us because when you start to compare costs between the colleges, there is a difference. There's a difference between the costs where the institution is as occupationally centered and one that has a program where you have hundreds of students come into one course and into one class. So we're vulnerable in that respect. And already Los Angeles State, San Francisco State, San Diego State, San Jose State are complaining because it only costs them $775 to $800 for educating one student, where some of them, the smaller colleges in the northern part of the state, go up as high as $1,200 or $1,400 per student. We've tried to keep ours on an average, around $1,050, and we've been kind of holding to that. So they wouldn't point their finger at us because they expected us to be higher because of our type of program. But we've been keeping in good with them and been able to get what we have. But how long is that gonna last because of that pressure when they give the whole system just an allotted sum and they have to divide it among themselves? So we have to watch and be careful about that. And I think that is important because sometimes some people feel that they're being squeezed. Well, we're just being squeezed because of the system, because of what we're up against in comparison to the other colleges. Now another one that I'm concerned about, and I'm concerned about it for this campus particularly. Already the chancellor has told us that half of the trustees are opposed to residence halls. Now we have on this campus between 2,400 students. Our town may be catching up a little bit, but when we figure out the numbers that we are anticipated to have in the next few years, 12,000 students, we can't have them because unless we have residence halls. And so we have a problem there. We have more residence halls than any other state college. But to have more of them, we have to justify them as a residence institution. We have to do a good job with these residence hall students. We have to do a job where we can educate them as resident students. I want to say also that the private colleges are opposed to the state colleges having residence hall students, because they feel that's their bailiwick. They feel that's what that belongs to them. And they did say, however, and I've been to meetings where private college presidents have been in meeting, and they said that they're not afraid of Cal Poly in that regard because we offer them a different kind of a program than they offer. But they are afraid of the state colleges getting this kind of a program of residence hall students because they're in direct competition with them on residence hall students. So we got a problem on residence hall students we've got to watch, and we've got to be very, very careful about and justify our job. Then we have a problem here more than any other college in competition. Right now in agriculture, even though we have the largest enrollment in agriculture of any undergraduate institution in the United States, according to the U.S. Office of Education, we have three other campuses of the state colleges in which we're competing, and they are competing. They have them in every high school, even down to Roy Grande, who went there from Fresno to gather students to Fresno. Chico's out all over the state trying to get students in agriculture. And we're getting along fine with our two campuses, but nevertheless, we have a limited number of students who can take agriculture, who will take agriculture, especially when the trend is down in the downward direction for agriculture. So we have many junior colleges that have agriculture. So to get those students in that program, we have to watch and shore up our program and look ahead and see what we can do to make the very best program for the time and for the future that we possibly can. In engineering right now, practically every state college has an engineering program, and three university campuses. Two of the university campuses have programs in agriculture, and they have people out. They not only have people out, but they have the farm advisors in every county appointed as counselors for the university to send people to Davis for agriculture. And in engineering, I suppose they have the same kind of a setup because they're looking for students, and they're all looking for students, the same as we are. Business education, all the state colleges have business education. And that's another program in which we compete. And in home economics, and this is in this report, all that information is right here. All the state colleges but one have home economics, and that's Alameda. I don't know why they don't have it, but they probably will have it. But probably because they've only been a two-year program up to now. Now remember that our Enabling Act says that we must emphasize these four or five programs. And this is the basis for our program, even though we have other occupational programs that we can emphasize, but these are the ones that are in the Enabling Act. And remember, the classes in these programs are naturally smaller, the equipment is more expensive, and we have to do an excellent job, and we have to compete from an excellent standpoint. Now, another thing that, as you know, over the years, there was a kind of a loose type of organization for the state colleges. I can remember they had no organization way back in the 30s. I can remember when Andy Hill came in the state office and tried to get them to various colleges together on the building programs. That's before Cal Poly was considered a state college. Then Joel Berkman came in, and then Darby Douglas came in, and then Dr. Vache came in. And they ran the program for the State Board of Education and the state Superintendent of Public Instruction. In order for self-defense and to get along together, the college, state college presidents formed a council of state college presidents. They had no official status. They were just formed to get together, exchange ideas, to try to keep uniform programs as far as possible, and to lay out strategy in handling the legislature. But with the new chancellors coming in under Gallagher and Leifer, they abolished that whole program. And what they actually did under Gallagher and Leifer was to not form an individual college, and no individual college was given any recognition. They formed a trustees college system, all centered in the college, and all the rest of us were just branches. They wanted us all to be the same. They worked in that direction. They bypassed the presidents, they bypassed the administration, they bypassed and came into all the campuses in that way. Of course, naturally, a chaos resulted, and that's one of the problems that the chancellor had. So one of the first things he did when he was appointed chancellor was to tell the trustees he wanted to form a new council of state college presidents, and to take each one of them on his staff as such to advise him in an advisory capacity. And so we have already had two meetings. One meeting was held one meeting was held on April 13th and 14th. Another meeting was held a week ago this last Monday. And we're going to meet again at Kellogg's during the week of July 9th. Now, the first meeting, they met on Monday, on the 13th of April, as a state college council. They met with representatives from the various campuses of the colleges. New people sent representatives. We had two, one from this campus and one from the other campus. And that was on the 14th of April. At our meeting on last week, we met as presidents, but we're going to meet on the 10th as state college presidents, as a council of state college presidents at Kellogg's. We're meeting on the 11th as state college presidents, chancellor and the staff, and representatives from each state college faculty. And then on the 12th and 13th, they're going to meet again with the state board trustees. So we're going to meet down there for a period of 4 days with presidents along, presidents and staff representatives, president, staff, representatives, and trustees, so as to get this whole thing and iron out some of these problems that I'm talking about, so we'll all be thinking along the same lines. I happen to be on the agenda committee. We're meeting next the 14th of next week at Kellogg's to get out the agenda for those meetings, the three presidents named on them. And by the way, I'm also been named the chairman of the legislative committee. I don't know why. I don't know what'll come of it, but there's a lot of fence netting to be done, and I hate to think of all the job there is to it. Another program I mentioned I want to talk about briefly is our Cal Poly Long Range Planning. As you know, about 5 or 6 years ago, we met for several days, representatives of the faculty on each campus, and we had committees working. They sent out questionnaires. They've been working along on long-range planning for Cal Poly. I've been hammering on this for a long time. I don't get the thing going the way I like, because I can't see how we can let the chancellor's office or the Department of Finance or someone else tell us how many students we're going to have. You know what happens. They give us a figure, and then we just put our hand in a hat and pull out courses and fill the courses and guess all the way through. And that's not the way to build an institution. We got these buildings this way, and they turned out pretty well. But for the long-time program, we have to know where we're going and how we're going to get there. And that's what we've been working toward. We're working hard. Another thing we've been doing right along with it is to get our enabling acts tied down by law again, to get our profile worked out and redone, and that was done about 3 years ago. We worked on a proposed guidelines for our whole program and what Cal Poly stands for and the like. And here this last March and April, I met with the department heads and division heads on each of our campuses to talk and to go over these guidelines, philosophies, and objectives so we could get them restudied by departments and then passed on to see if we're going in the right direction, to see what changes should be made, and all to get this long-range planning committee working and working hard. Now, the way that I understand that they're working toward is to have two people from each division, two faculty members from each division, be appointed and working with executive councils and working on this long-range program. Now, I told the people at these meetings that this is one of the most important things that we have before us. You people have to know what you stand for, where you're going, and how you're going to get there. And that's what the purpose of this program will be. That, along with your kind of staff council or whatever you vote for, that and this long-range planning are going to make or break Cal Poly's future and solve all these problems I'm working on. If you all stand together on where you're going and how you're going to get there, there's no problem that I can see, because they can't defeat what you people want and where you want to go and how you get there. So this long-range planning program is very, very important. And I hope, and the only reason I'm sticking around here at this time, is to hope that this thing will get underway and get working, and that the long time setup will be tied down, so no one from outside, including the chancellor's office, the trustees, or anybody else, can divert you from where Cal Poly is going. Now, you're all aware that this last year we had appointed on each campus an interim staff council, and they're elected to do a job, and they did a good job. And they sent their proposals in last week. So last week, I want to congratulate this staff for the wonderful job they did, for the many hours they put in, and they gave a lot of thought to what they submitted for referendum, and I'm sure that you people will be very pleased with the work that they've done. Now, we're working against a deadline, and of course, yesterday was a holiday. I didn't get to this job until Monday, and it took a lot of time Monday and Tuesday to get the thing up. But tomorrow, each staff member on each campus will receive information on all the material that was sent to me from each of the campuses on the proposed new staff council that you people want, or whatever you're going to call it. I hope that you'll get it all tomorrow. I know you'll get it all tomorrow. I'm also setting a week from tomorrow, the 8th, for an election. That's a week from tomorrow. Now, the election is the only place that we diverged from any of the recommendations. I said in the beginning, and I always said that we would handle the election. The election is going to be handled exactly the way you vote for the United States president, or the governor of the state of California is going to be handled exactly in that same way. The entire proposal will be submitted to you tomorrow. There'll be more information going out in the staff bulletin on next Tuesday. We're going to ask the executive committee of the Interim Staff Council to conduct 2 days of meetings someplace where you can come in and ask questions about what is meant by certain items in these proposals that have been made. And then if there's any more questions, you can get them wherever you want. So that will be out, but you'll get all that information tomorrow, and you get all. So we only have a deadline to meet, and we have to go forward, and I hope that the election will take place and everybody on the staff will give a vote. Now, my last item, I think, is the most important item of all, and that is a planned program of emphasis on excellence in instruction. What was the single most important activity conducted on this campus during the 1961-62 academic year? No matter how many other important things happen during the year, the single most important thing we do each year is to provide for our students a worthwhile educational experience. While it is not possible to stop all the other activities and concentrate solely on the instructional program in the classroom, laboratory, and field, there are compelling reasons why we should give more thought to the question, just how well are we teaching the young men and women who come to us? Now, let's be frank about this question is being answered in the most colleges. If and when the question is raised, do we begin by evaluating the cost, modernness of the equipment we have available in the laboratory? Do we start checking the lighting, ventilation, and comfort of the classrooms, and perhaps even the instructor's offices? Do we concern ourselves next with the availability of buses for field trips, gymnasiums and swimming pools for recreation, parking facilities, bookstore and cafeteria services, and a host of other auxiliary services which can make our lives smooth running or bumpy, depending upon the convenience of the facilities and efficiency of the services? Do faculty members ask this question of themselves after each class session? Are we able to evaluate themselves accurately? Could you, as a teacher, honestly say that you did an excellent job with each class on each class period? Would it take a superman to carry a full teaching load, handle other related instructional assignments, and say to himself at the end of the year that he had honestly done the best possible teaching job that year? We hear much about the need for excellence in education. We heartily believe that every school, every college should strive to be excellent in tasks they undertake. A college is only as excellent as the sum total of the accomplishments of its staff. If we are going to continue to strive to be an outstanding college which emphasizes instruction and not research, and thereby attract serious occupationally oriented students, we will have to make certain that each and every member of our teaching faculty is individually doing an outstanding job. But we are not all outstanding experts in the subject matter field to which we may be assigned to teach. Perhaps we have just begun to teach, and it would be presumptuous to consider oneself outstanding, particularly if we never taught before and are learning by doing. How many of our teaching faculty members who are doing top-notch jobs with students, not in popularity contests, but in drawing out of students enthusiastic participation which guarantees the individual striving of the students for both competency in the how and the understanding absorption of the why? I think we have a lot of them, but do we know them? Could you name them? How did you learn they were tops? Did the students tell you? Did other teachers tell you? How did you find out? Visit classes or just hear about it secondhand or over a coffee cup? Why should we find out who our very best teachers are? Not just to see that they get a well-deserved promotion and pay increase, although this is not an undesirable outcome, but because we need to have our best help our next best become better. In other words, we got to have our best people help our next best people become better. I think we know that some of our teachers are not doing it expertly as we would like, and I imagine they would like. If we could find some way to help every almost perfect teacher at Cal Poly to become perfect, think how this improvement would be reflected in the development of the individual students who come in contact with them. An equally serious problem is that of evaluating the teaching effectiveness of new candidates for faculty positions. We are faced with having to employ more and more teachers who either have no formal teaching experience or they are out-of-state candidates whose competency in both subject matter and teaching skills may be evaluated on a paper basis recommendation. We try naturally to have at least one personal interview with all candidates, but many times this consists of one short interview. After we appoint new people to the staff, there are many different ways in which these people are oriented and assisted in becoming better teachers as there are instructional departments. Our salary schedule is getting better. We can attract very competent people in many fields. But how can we transform a competent teacher to an excellent one? What are some of the attributes of those teachers who seem to inspire their students to strive for excellence? Some of the qualities of the creative teachers are devotion, knowledge, imagination, quick intelligence, patience, concern for others, grasp of principles, and attractive personality. Classrooms without these kinds of creative teachers are merely places where students mark time, sometimes getting lazier and lazier in the process. The absence of vitalizing personal qualities in the teacher is more injurious to the student than we want to recognize. When the student's imagination is not stirred, or when he merely suffers through the class, he becomes more and more hostile toward the idea that he should attempt to strive for excellence, if the teacher is obviously not attempting to strive for the same objective. We spend considerable time developing curricula to make certain that each course will contribute a prescribed share of progress toward a goal. Course outlines are developed with the idea that each should have an expected outcome that the student can reach within its prescribed period of time with certain prescribed expenditure of effort. I believe Cal Poly has done and is continuing to do an excellent job in making certain that our courses are realistic and realizable fractions of a curriculum goal. But it is not the availability of a superabundance of technical courses that makes a good teacher. The chief requirement is a bright and energetic individual who continues to be deeply affected by his involvement in the educative process. I am hoping that this next year we will develop ways and means of selecting the best possible candidates for the teaching positions, that we will also find within our faculty some willing experts who will help us develop a planned program of improving instruction. We can want Cal Poly to be outstanding. It will take outstanding teachers in every class to reach that goal. It is a goal worth striving for. Now, in conclusion, there are many other items I could talk about, but time won't permit. I want to remind you that if you want some more buildings, you better get out and work for Amendment 3 next Tuesday. Also, that I think that you're going to have a very pleasant summer. I hope you have a relaxing one, so that you can come back here when I will be able to talk to you again in the fall to start off with a very good year to carry out some of the ideas I try to express to you today.
Thank you, President McPhee, for a very inspiring message of Union.